at Colonial. And Aaron Wellman is going to join us after a huge weekend for Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. They win the Coaching Club of America Oaks Nest, who arguably is the in the top three or four right now of all 3 year olds of either sex. I don't think that's a stretch. Down Royal is the top three of either sex in the steeplechase set. Back after this, Aaron Wellman joins us.
On Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule, an average daily purses of $625,000. The 9 week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50 cent pick five with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life. Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, and what a fun visit with Kate Dalton. I had to take the opportunity, given obviously having her in person, had to take the opportunity to kind of get her story. And I know there's, I suppose there's parents out there that that may have. We talk about this a lot of times when we're at University of Arizona too, with the symposium and the racetrack industry program. You know, your son or daughter. Expresses an interest, takes an interest, right? that's like in Barton Fink, he's taken an interest. you have to yield to the power of a passion, essentially. Now maybe I'm not the right guy for this, for parental advice, seeing as how I've got grandchildren, you know, via Tina, but I wasn't lucky enough to have any of my own, and it's a, to be honest, that's going to be one of the disappointments in my life, but from my own experience and my brother's too, I would encourage parents, if you're young parents, your prospective parents, if your children have a passion and something that they are absolutely, you know, wild-eyed about and captivated by and just engages them more than anything else. And if you're listening to this show, then chances are you've got a connection to equine sport in one way or another. Don't discourage them, and don't be, you know, don't be aghast or horrified if they have an interest in something that doesn't necessarily mesh with your expectations or aspirations for them. Because I can tell you, as someone who took a long time to get to where I, you know, to what, you know, what I'm doing. I mean, it's what I always wanted to do. And when I got to college, when I got to Colgate, I, you know, there were two or three things that I wanted to do, and one of them was broadcast. So I was dissuaded by parental sway. And my brother was to some extent too. His love and passion was for Broadway. And he's now one of the best known, if not the best known, Broadway press agent in New York. And I've got this I've got this little 3-hour cruise daily about the game. And here's Aaron Wellman, who also was brought into the game and was exposed to it and had a passion for it, and is a wild-eyed success in his own right with Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. And he joins us on the heels of his new favorite racetrack, Saratoga. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on, man.
Not at all. You knew it had to be important for you to bypass opening weekend to Del Mar.
Yeah, absolutely, and that wasn't really in the cards. You know, after the Belmont Stakes, we had thought that we were probably going to wait for the Alabama with Nest, but she was doing so well, Todd was so confident in her that we ran in the CCA Oaks, so called an audible, and my daughter and I got on a plane on Thursday and headed out to Saratoga, and it was certainly well worth the trip.
Talk about the, you know, the this odyssey now with her, because it, I mean, I'm not somebody that you know, that beats the drum for, you know, for certain directions for a talent like this by any means. But it's pretty clear as we get past halfway that she's, you know, one of the top 3, 4, 5, 3-year-olds of either sex.
Absolutely. I think she proved that in the Belmont Stakes when she was second behind Mo Donegal. And with all respect to Mo Donegal on the occasion, arguably best that day. You know, she had a horrific stumble at the gate, which would have knocked out the vast majority of horses in any race, let alone in a mile-and-a-half classic against the other sex. But she's just getting better and better, and it's a testament to Todd Pletcher and his program. You know, I say this every time I get the platform to do it. I think he's the greatest of all time. And he shows it week in and week out, and the job he's done with Nest is second to none, and really a testament to the filly herself. She's just gone from strength to strength, and I know in the wake of Saturday's performance, there's a lot of chatter about whether she should run in the Travelers against the boys again or not, but I think we're just going to let the dust settle for the moment, and as tempting as it might be to run in the Travelers and try to make history in that respect, the Alabama is a race that is extremely important, extremely prestigious in its own right. So I think our ultimate goal is to do what's best for the filly, try to continue to maintain her on a championship trajectory and get her to the Breeders' Cup as a 3-year-old the best way we can. So we'll certainly keep the Travers in mind. And I think that two factors will come into play. Number one, if she proves that she might need an extra week off that big performance in the Oaks, or if the Travers looks like it's going to soften up a little bit with some substantive infection. So at the end of the day, we'll do what's best for the filly and our partners, Mike Rapoli, Mike House, and our Eclipse partners, and hopefully take it from there.
How different are the decisions to make, and is there any element that is, you know, that's different than a horse like Taprit, for instance, and how you campaign?
I don't really think so. I mean, the main distinction here is that it's a filly that you're considering running against the boys, whereas the boys you can never consider running against the fillies.
Sure.
You know, subjectively. So this is a situation where we took our big swing in the Belmont Stakes, and she proved that she belongs with those colts. But again, it's going to be a hard sway to get her to swerve away from the Alabama. You know, of course, no. The Travers is a race we'd all love to win, no doubt about it, but the Alabama is still the Alabama, and it's nothing to scoff at. And if we can win another grade one with her of the caliber of grade one that the Alabama always presents, and look, I don't know who's going to show up in the Alabama, but right now the Travers is shaping up a real race. And do we want to do that to her at this point? And it's not a question of distance either, because
no,
they're both at the mile and a quarter distance. You know, so if the Alabama was at a shorter distance, that might not play to her strengths, and we could stretch her out to the mile and a quarter, you know, test of stamina in the Travers, then that might make the decision a little bit more difficult. But it's not. We get to run against fillies at a mile and a quarter, you know, for a really important grade one like the Alabama.
And, you know, I'm without looking at the Alabama charts for the last few years, I can't really think who has come along in recent vintage. You know, we very often get to the Alabama and we look at pedigree and we look at particularly at style, because horses that are going to, you know, draft on or near the lead have you know, done very well in it. But I mean, she's uniquely qualified, obviously, to I mean, she stands to be a exceedingly heavy favorite going forward. You know, we'll see what happens with Malathat, but it sure feels like this is a unique situation where you have a horse that could have won the Belmont, and you know, cutting back to a mile and a quarter is seemingly just so natural.
No doubt about it. And while the Belmont was always in the back of our mind throughout the early part of her campaign, the first half of the year, the Alabama is really the race that she's made for all along. You
sure.
know, and the pressure from outside industry forces to run in the Travers and to try to take on history against the boys again really isn't there, because I think that the argument is there that Todd, Mike Rapoli, Eclipse, and Mike House have taken on a very sportsman's approach to her campaign this year. You know, we haven't ducked anybody. We ran in the Oaks. We had a tough trip. Secret Oath won it on the square. Came back, ran against the boys. She ran in Lights Out to be second, proved she belonged. And then, really, we had every reason in the world to just wait for the Alabama after the Belmont. But we did the sportsman's thing. We took on Secret Oath toe-to-toe to, you know, let them settle it out on the playing field, even though we only had, you know, 6 weeks from the Belmont, and we could have waited for the Alabama. So I don't think there's any sort of that pressure. But this filly, like, if you had said to me after she won the Demoiselle as a two-year-old late last year in November, what race is she most cut out for to win as a three-year-old, I would have said the Alabama. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. She's bred and built for this, and she just continues to thrive under Todd's tutelage, and hopefully she can maintain this sensational form, because we all know it's very difficult to do, but she seems to be blossoming as we throw more at her.
Before anybody says to themselves, well, what about Swiss Skydiver? Swiss Skydiver hadn't run in the Preakness yet, folks. She won the Alabama, then came the Oaks, then came the Preakness. So Swiss Skydiver does not qualify as an Alabama filly, that Alabama winner, that, you know, that there was knowledge of her aptitude for a classic trip. I guess in Kenny's mind there was, and that was proven out, you know, frankly, not once, but twice. This filly, it's funny, because when she started her season, Aaron, you know, there was some chatter that, well, she's, you know, she you know, she isn't necessarily, you know, going to go on and edge her way, you know, into the discussion of the top three-year-old fillies this year, and she shut that down in a hurry.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really understand where the lack of respect was coming from. The filly broke her maiden going a mile and a 16th, first time out at Belmont Park, which is hard to do under any circumstances. Excuse me. Then she was third, a fast closing third, when she had to cut back to a one turn mile and attempted. We actually considered running her in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies off of just her debut maiden win. So that ought to tell the world what Todd Pletcher and what our connections thought of her. Thankfully, you know, we let cooler heads prevail. We stayed home for the Tempted. It was a good race. And then she got the job done in the Demoiselle, which is a historic race, going a mile and an eighth for fillies. But to tell you sort of in what high regard we held her going into this season, you know, I'm not a guy that likes to over-promote or over-hype any part of our operation. For sure, horses, we like to let the horses do the talking on the racetrack. But even going back to her first race of the year in the Suncoast at Tampa, I brought out my nephew, Max Pollock, who is really talented 14-year-old young man that is really into sort of editing and producing film and video. And I brought him all the way out from California to Tampa because we wanted to start this series that he was going to produce called Nest on the Road to the Oaks. So, you know, for us to do that, and it was primarily for our partners and prospective partners to get a feel for what it's like to be associated with a filly capable of taking our partners on this really fun and magical path towards the Kentucky Oaks, which is such an important race and such a race that we want to win so badly. So we started doing that step by step in her progression throughout the season, documenting her road to the Oaks. And obviously she lived up to it, thankfully, because we would have looked like fools had we done that and she not made it there and performed well. But, you know, I don't know why she wasn't as esteemed as she should have been. But again, she's done the talking for us on the racetrack. And at the end of the day, that's what matters most.
Take us back for a second, because I suppose I probably brought this up. I know you and I talked earlier in the season, and certainly I've talked with Todd. But the original yearling purchase and a Keeneland yearling, and fairly early in the sale, $350, and actually, you and Mike Rapoli. Rapoli was in from the start on her, was he not?
He was, yes.
Yeah. Talk about the purchase. And you know, obviously this is something we've seen, and certainly, you know, Mike Rapoli with Vinny Viola, they were wildly active partnering on purchases, you know, this past year in particular. But you know, talk about this aspect of, you know, of where things are, Aaron. You know, I frequently use you as you know, a barometer of industry slash partnership progress and direction. What was your thoughts going into, you know, buying, you know, this horse in particular, and, you know, talk about the budget considerations and how these kinds of arrangements are happening and coming together.
Sure. No, and I appreciate that very much, Steve. Those are humbling words, and I'm flattered. So thank you. But Mike Rapoli is, you know, one of the biggest players in the game, and he's such a big proponent of the sport and the industry at large. And I would say 4 years ago, we started to combine on a very select group of yearlings on occasion. And that came about because at the time, our vice president of bloodstock, Jacob West, had a pre-existing relationship with Mike and his team. And then I had gotten to know Mike a little bit through our mutual association with Todd Pletcher, having horses with Todd for several years. And the synergy between Todd and Jacob came together right after Caprit won the Belmont Stakes for Eclipse in 2017. And Mike's dream had always been to win the Belmont. And we had been second the year prior with Destin, won it with Caprit. And Mike sort of tapped us on the shoulder and said, "Hey, my dream's to win the Belmont. Why don't you go and find us a Belmont horse?" So we went out and bought a couple yearlings that year, one of them which turned out to be a multiple stakes winner in New York named Moretti. And he didn't quite make the Belmont, but he was cut out to be a Belmont horse. He ended up winning a couple marathon stakes in New York the year following as a four-year-old. So we missed the boat by a year with that one. Had another stakes winner in New York with Mike. So our sample is probably about 9 or 10 deep, and I think we've got 3 stakes winners, including Nest, who's a multiple grade one winner. So our numbers are pretty good with Mike. But as you alluded to, partnering up nowadays, not just in the traditional sense of public partnerships like an Eclipse or anybody else in the partnership space, but conglomerates combined and comprised of titans of industry like Mike Rapoli and Vinny Viola, like SF Bloodstock, Starlight, Matiquette et al., like Windstar and China Horse Club, the Stone Streets of the world, the Coolmores of the world. These are all players in the game that could very easily have their own individual stables that are choosing to spread their risk by combining forces. And we've been very fortunate at Eclipse to be able to combine with all of those players at some point or another, and currently have horses with most, if not all, of those individuals and titans of industry. So that's a huge honor and just a testament to our brand that those individuals are willing to put their name alongside of Eclipse. But at the end of the day, it's all about spreading risk. And while we will occasionally take a big swing for a stallion profiled prospect, whether it be at the yearling sales, two-year-old sales, or in the private market, we're really focused with our bread and butter being on the filly side of the equation. And with all of these conglomerates sort of really glomming towards trying to make stallion prospects, I mean, I can't tell you how fierce the competition is for those types of individuals among all these groups. We sort of zig while they're zagging, and in fact put the emphasis on our scouting process on the fillies for several reasons, primarily because at the end of the day, you're always going to have some residual value. And even though there is severely fierce competition to get those fillies into your stable and on your roster, I do believe that it's actually a little bit lighter than butting heads with the individuals and groups that I referred to earlier that are all really jockeying for position to get these stallion prospects into their barns. So the fillies is where it's at for us. We've been very fortunate to win classics with colts and have a lot of grade one winning colts, but to sustain yourself and stand the test of time in this business, I think you've got to be firmly rooted in fillies, and that's why we've been fortunate enough to earn that moniker, hashtag Eclipse Fillies, over the years.
Well, and that, you know, that's been a discussion. I probably even more so with Michael W. McCarthy, right? That Michael helped establish that direction with the success that he authored.
Oh, Michael. Yeah, he's been great to us, and I'd like to think that we've been great to him, too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, sure.
I'm just messing around. We were the first to put, you know, horses behind his webbing. But, yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about the job that Michael has done for Eclipse, particularly with fillies. And you look at what he's done with outside horses, not just Eclipse horses, but the City of Lights of the world, the CCs of the world. You know, and the list goes on. But, yeah, you know, he's won an Ashland for us. He's won a Honeymoon for us. He's won an American Oaks for us, a Gamely for us. So, yeah, Michael's top-notch, and it's sort of fun because, you know, Todd's been our main man on the East Coast for several years and won so many big races for us and been such an integral part of Eclipse's success. And then to take a Todd Pletcher disciple like Michael and be with him from the beginning is really special. And not that I would ever compare us or put my shoes into a legend like Cot Campbell's, or my feet into a legend like Cot Campbell's shoes. But, you know, our relationship with Dogwood Stable and being tapped on the shoulder to preserve the Dogwood legacy several years back when Cot retired, and to know that Cot was one of the first to put horses in Todd's barn and really get him off the ground, you know, for us to play a role in Michael's evolution as a top class trainer throughout the country. I don't want to say it's synonymous, but it's something that we take a lot of pride in, and that parallel between the Dogwood and Eclipse relationship and Todd and Michael McCarthy is something that we do take a lot of pride in.
In addition to Nest, the weekend, and not just the weekend, but really the last, really the month of July, I suppose, Aaron, if we think about Aloha West kind of rounding into form, and I'm wondering if he's going to be in the entry box tomorrow for the Vanderbilt, but Ben Bang, a winner of the Blue Sparkler, last week at Monmouth, which was part of the cross country, and that kind of caught my eye. Then there was the maiden on Sunday that you hung around for, and with good reason, a practical joke filly. And you know, tell us about some of the other recent successes, and then we'll get into what lies ahead.
Yeah, you know, you always have this constant state of paranoia running through your veins and your brain when running a stable like ours, because attrition just comes with the territory. It's always going to be a part of what we've got to deal with. And, you know, when you lose a filly like Sharing, for example, in the last couple of years, or a Cone Lima, you know, or even an Ohio or Valiant, you know, these are for a lot of stables, once-in-a-lifetime horses that we're blessed to have all at once. You know, Speech, at one time, I think we had 6 grade one winners on the roster simultaneously within the last 18 months, and most of those have either been retired or injured or are on the sidelines, you know, and it's a game of numbers. You know, it's a portfolio business, but you get worried that, man, you know, that franchise player goes to the sidelines or gets retired. How are you going to replace it? And that's really what separates the men from the boys in this game, is being able to find those big horses year in and year out. And we've just been so fortunate with our loyal base of partners at Eclipse that just keep answering the call every time we ring the bell, that we're able to go out and really scour the globe for equine talent and delve into all markets, whether it's the yearling market that we're gearing up for right now, or two-year-olds in training, or the private market with proven horses off the racetrack. Our partners have been so good to us, because you need those Saturday horses, and we've just been really fortunate. You know, just in the month of July, I mean, I think we're coming off a career year with 70-some-odd wins, 22 stakes wins, several grade one wins, and a Breeders' Cup win. And you wonder, can you sustain that? And we're already at 44 wins, you know, through July here, 10 stakes wins, 4 graded, 2 grade ones. You know, and it's just all about the partners continuing to support us so that we can go out and acquire that talent, develop it, and hopefully deliver the goods that our partners deserve on the racetrack. But right now I'm looking at our results from July, and we're on a tear. 11 for 25 with 4 placings and 4 consecutive weekends where we've had a stakes or a graded stakes win. So we're heating up right when it matters most, and hopefully as the championship season turns the corner and things at the Spa and Del Mar heat up, you're going to see the Eclipse Silks continue to thrive.
Well, and I mentioned Aloha West. I suppose Largent should deserve a mention. I am sitting at Colonial, and he won the Ned Evans. And we told you about Ben Benning.
For the second time, he won the Ned Evans at Colonial. So that's right. Shout out to Colonial for sure.
Yeah. And then came Nest. Talk about the two-year-olds, and then I want to ask you about the international ambitions when we get a chance. But the two-year-old season, and you know, certainly with the venues, you know, the kind of money that's being offered, Aaron, it's easy to justify spending a little bit more, to be honest. And I'm hearing this from people. You know, they're saying, you know, can we, if we win a couple of races, we can get that back. I mean, Kentucky Downs and Saratoga, Del Mar's got a terrific purse structure. What's going on in Kentucky, obviously. You know, talk about the two-year-old program, and I guess you could start with Cowling's win Sunday.
Yeah, we've started 6 two-year-olds so far, 2 first-time winners and 3 thirds with our babies to date. 2 fillies in particular that won very impressively first time out in California for the aforementioned Michael McCarthy, a filly called Procrastination. A daughter of Not This Time that we bought for $72,000 in October at Fasig Tipton as a yearling. She's done everything right since we broke her down at Ocala Stud and really put on a show in her debut at Los Al, which was designed all along as a prep for what we hoped would be a prelude to the Sorrento Stakes at Del Mar on August 13th. She's doing really well, touch wood, and we have high hopes for her. And then out on the East Coast, Kaling was really impressive in her TDN Rising Star debut win on Sunday at Saratoga. This is a filly that we also thought very highly of. We paid $220 for at Keeneland September as a yearling. daughter of Practical Joke. From the moment we put the saddle on her at Susan Montaigne's down in Ocala, she acted like she could be the real thing. And we had to maneuver a little bit as she was about ready to run for Todd, and we allowed patience to prevail, thankfully, because we wanted to run her 4th of July weekend at Belmont, and we resisted the temptation. Then we wanted to run her opening day at Saratoga, but wanted to get a work over the track, so we waited for the second weekend, and it played out well. It looked like it was really a spin-away-type trial. Wesley's $750,000 Justify Philly. Chad had a Philly in there that they paid $400-some-odd for, and everybody was sort of touting theirs as the best in the barn, and for her to go out and do it the way she did it, breaking on top, taking back, tucking in, taking dirt, finding a seam, and then really lengthening her stride in the stretch to mow that filly down was really impressive. So we're very excited about her, and so hopefully we've got a Del Mar debutante type out on the West Coast with Michael and a spinaway type with Todd, with plenty of bullets in the holster. As two-year-old season unfolds, we're excited about our crop, and again, it's a testament to our partners that understand the program, understand that it's a numbers game, and you've got to spread risk because you've got to have those prospects coming in behind the stars that are ultimately going to fall by the wayside year in and year out. So if we can replenish consistently and continue to find the talent and develop it properly, we're going to be able to continue to sustain this pace for our partners as well.
Aaron Wellman is with us, Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, of course, off of a huge weekend with Nest, not even reestablishing, I mean, it's established, but, with authority showing her position in the three-year-old scene, male or female. We've discussed this in various occasions, depending on the origins of the horse. How has your acquisition philosophy changed, if it has at all, Aaron? Between the competition, and we sort of broached this when I asked you about the partnerships and the risk sharing. But in terms of the evaluation of stock and being potentially rebuffed in the yearling market, and then they got the two-year-old sales as options. But you seem to have a certain prescribed approach from your origins in the partnership scene. Has that changed at all, or is it a season by season, year by year basis?
Well, that's a really good question, Steve. And if you ask me if it's changed, yes, it's an ever-evolving process trying to select equine talent and minimize your mistakes and your failures, right? So you're just trying to improve yourself all the time and learn from your mistakes, because you're going to be wrong, or I'm not going to say you're, I'm going to be wrong a lot more than I'm going to be right in this game. And that just comes with the territory. But you touched upon it a few minutes ago. The economic model of the business is changing for the better right now. That's a positive transition from really an upside down financial model that we've been battling for so long. And it's not to say that we can change our approach and say that we're in this to make money. I'm never going to tell one of our partners or a prospective partner that comes through the doors at Eclipse and wants to join one of our partnerships that your goal should or even can be to make money. It can't be. You got to come in with the perspective that you got to expect to lose every penny you invest, and then some, once the bills keep piling on. We obviously take a lot of pride in providing better results on the racetrack and financially for our partners than that, but it has to be your perspective going in. But I do think that there are positive strides in the economic model, like you said, purses in Kentucky, purses in New York, and even purses in California, which really does get a bad rap for what goes on out here. But I got to give credit where credit is due, and right now our purse structure is very, very strong, all things considered, with the prospect of sports betting down the pipeline. soon rather than later. So, you know, major venues throughout the country are really thriving. And it's certainly an incentive for people to make better sense of it from a financial perspective. But honestly, my approach is that just like any good investment portfolio, you've got to be diversified. And that means you've got to be able to acquire assets in all different realms, genres, and sectors of the industry. You've got to be primarily based conservatively in your portfolio. So for me, that means the biggest slice of the pie goes to Phillies, hopefully with some pedigree that we could get our hands on. And then you've got to diversify in the sense that supporting and complementing the conservative side of your portfolio are Colts. And then you go aggressive and you take bigger swings for bigger dollars with Colts that could potentially have a Stallions profile by way of pedigree and makeup. So, you know, we really do try to offer a variety of opportunities for our partners. And like I said, it's all about diversity, diversifying the types of horses that you're able to present to your base, as well as creating assets over the course of time so that your partners aren't constantly dipping into their own pockets every time they see a prospect that they want to jump in on and join a partnership with Eclipse. But it's a portfolio business. There is power in numbers. You can't look at it from a financial perspective that you're going to make money. Set out a budget, stay disciplined, and for us, it's all about Phillies, 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 and the rest will follow.
Should mention, too, I mean, over the years, Aaron, that we've talked, and as Eclipse has grown, the venues and you know, the opportunities for people in different parts of the country, not just parts of the country, but also in Canada, and you know, just looking, in fact, at wins here. We talked about July, but Los Al and Churchill, obviously Saratoga, Belmont, Woodbine, another one at Los Al, Colonial, as mentioned, Monmouth, Ellis Park, and Del Mar, the win will come, they've only had two starters so far, but it's a long meet. Then comes this foray in Europe. Talk about the international business and you know, your thoughts there. We certainly talked when it came to the excitement about going abroad with Graham, but how has that, you know, changed or broadened philosophy, and what kind of challenges does it present for you?
Sure. Just like you've got to diversify in terms of the equine assets that you try to acquire for the stable, you've got to diversify geographically, right? Because for our business, it allows for us to attract a wider swath of potential partners that want to race in certain locales throughout the country in North America, if not Europe and abroad. And look, we're really designed and created to try to make history in this sport. And I think we've got a strong foothold in North America. In our 10, 11 years, we've won incredible races all across the country in North America. But the world is getting smaller in all respects. And that's applying very strongly to the horse racing industry, where the business is shrinking and becoming more consolidated in all ways. And that means from a global perspective. So Europe has always been a venue where I've acquired a lot of talent for many, many years. And I've been fascinated by the process of scouting talent in Europe that I think will translate well and successfully into the States. Ever since my days growing up here in Southern California, watching Bobby Frankel, the master, do it time and time again. So that's really what I cut my teeth doing originally, before I was doing this professionally, was importing horses from Europe. And the next step from just importing horses from Europe is keeping horses in Europe and developing them there, which we've dipped our toe into gradually and are trying to increase our presence in France, in England, in Ireland, and we've got a handful of horses there now. We won a Royal Ascot race last year. We took another runner to Royal Ascot this year. So Europe is a hotbed of talent that we could, you know, really access and that we like and that our partners are becoming more interested in participating in. Australia is another venue that is so vibrant. The industry is just booming down under right now, and it's just getting better and better. Their economic model is sensational, and just the overall enthusiasm for the sport is unparalleled. We've made a foray into Australia back in 2017, and we've been very methodical about our participation in Australia, but we were fortunate enough to win a classic there in 2017, and now we've got another classic contender potentially there heading into this fall. So it's just a burgeoning marketplace, and the desire and appetite for top quality racing in Australia is incredible. And our Eclipse partners domestically, and as we pick some more up abroad, have really sunk their teeth into it, which is exciting.
Well, when it comes to the international aspect, I suppose, you know, your experience at Team Valor has to, you know, serve as the template. And in fact, I know our friend and our own partners, when it comes to Dr. Miller and Steve Carlin, that admire you and you know, take an interest in your offerings, and they love the, you know, the international, South Africa and Australia. They're all over that.
Absolutely, and my time working with Barry Irwin of Team Valor was invaluable. To me, I give Barry credit all the time, and it's deserved. You know, he really was a pioneer and remains a pioneer in many respects. He's bold and innovative when it comes to his willingness to explore new territories and not just find talent there for the United States, but to race in those exotic venues as well. So that opened my eyes in a large way to how wide the world is, yet how narrow it can be as well. And I give him a lot of credit for blazing the trail for not just myself, but for a lot of people out there in the world. And it was an invaluable educational experience for sure, that there's not a day that goes by that I don't tap into that.
The European side of things, I mean, the one of the reasons that we see some European interests coming to North America, purses there are not as healthy, and the financial model there very different than what we've got here, and of course the calendar as well. But I was very eager to, you know, to get your perspective, given how many, you know, how many more international campaigners I see when I look at, you know, upcoming entries for you. I should also ask, Aaron, because we're basically doing a survey with you of all different aspects of the marketplace and of the racing landscape. Aaron Wellman with us from Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, and don't think I've brought this up with you yet. Some HISA conversation, Aaron, and your thoughts about what is some real frustrations and confusion on a lot of people's part. In fact, if anybody did not read Dave Bassler's op-ed piece at Pollock Report yesterday, dropped yesterday afternoon, I invite it, because Dave was very, I thought, eloquent and pointed in his own frustrations and on a wider basis, the frustrations that he's hearing from really industry-wide. But I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Look, just like any introductory program to any industry, there's going to be some growing pains. So that has to be expected, and we need to remain patient, because I think ultimately long term this will be a watershed moment for the industry, for our sustainability on a lot of levels. Something had to give, and I'm not saying that this is the ideal or and most importantly, it was doable. We did it. We got here, which has been really the barrier to entry for any national oversight at all for decades now. So I think time will tell, as it always does. And I know I'm speaking in vagaries because I'm learning as we go along. One thing that I know is a frustration of ours and a frustration for our trainers is the lack of consistency and co-mingling or sharing of operating systems, database, you know, what have you, electronically speaking, to streamline a lot of the admin process that is taking place. I think that ultimately the oversight itself will prove to be successful if and when we are able to instigate penalties. It's all going to boil down to, are we really going to have teams when HISA is faced with a real situation? That will be the determining factor. But from a procedural perspective at this point, I think that's where a lot of the concern comes from. And my biggest worry is as it relates to the smaller operations being able to comply with what are pretty extensive and rigorous demands from HISA right now. And we're very fortunate, so I can't be jaded by this very important issue, but we're fortunate that we have great support staff within Eclipse. Kelsey Marshall, I've said it, she's been with me from day one. She's the glue that holds everything together, and she's on top of this for us day in and day out, and she's taken the time to educate herself about HISA and how to keep in compliance. And we generally have our horses with larger trainers who also have incredible administrative staff and support staff that are capable of devoting resources towards compliance. But the little guys that are just trying to make ends meet, your meat and potatoes trainer, your mom-pa operations, I wonder whether they'll be able to survive in this HISA era, because it is very demanding. And we've got to find some happy medium to be able to keep these players in the game, because they're important, they're valuable. And I think we will improve. I think we will get there. I like what I'm seeing from HISA in their willingness to listen to the stakeholders. And we had to start somewhere. Was it the perfect launch? No. But we had to start somewhere, and I see that those with a vested interest in making this right are devoting themselves to making it right. And there's going to be growing pains. There's going to be some mistakes along the way, but I think if we all stick together and believe in this, ultimately it's really going to prove out as a major plus and a positive for the ultimate health of the industry long term.
Well, there's... there's a long way to go, and you know, it's only it is only 3 weeks, give or take. So we'll ride it out, I guess. I mean, I don't see what choice anybody's got. That's the biggest element. I mean, how much have you heard from partners? How much of a discussion point is it with your partners?
We try our best to keep our base informed on a step-by-step basis, and frankly, I'm educating myself on a step-by-step basis as well. You know, this is all uncharted territory. It's all new to us, so we're trying not to get too far out ahead of ourselves. But at the end of the day, Steve, the overriding emphasis as to why this is necessary And there's a lot of stuff that we've got to wade through to really keep focus on this primary goal. But it is to create a level playing field and a uniform set of rules all across the country. And our partners want to know that when an Eclipse horse lines up against any number of horses in any race, anywhere, that no one in that starting gate is taking an edge against us. We all want to be on the same playing field. And I think that that's really what we can't lose sight of here, is that is the goal of HISA, is to create this fair and level playing field for everybody. And anybody that decides that they don't want to play by those rules, they're going to be penalized, punished, and no longer welcome, hopefully, at some point. And that's really what we have to keep our eye on the ball here about, because the admin part of it, the logistical part of it, the procedural part of it is painful right now. There's no doubt about it. But the old adage is no pain, no gain. So I think we've all just got to stick with it. Communicate to HISA. Lisa Lazarus has done a very good job of making herself accessible, as well as everybody underneath her. We as stakeholders need to do our part to contribute to try to make it better. Raise issues that we're having with them so that they can fix them and just make a better model. But at the end of the day, this is about uniformity and fairness. And for all the stakeholders on the horsemanship side of the equation, breeders, owners, trainers, and on the gambling side of the equation, it's going to ultimately provide a higher level of confidence in our product every step of the way. And if we can get there, we're going to be having this discussion 15 years from now, and you're going to be talking about the purses in Kentucky and New York and California being strong. But I think the gambling product is going to continue to get stronger. And I'm not giving any credit to the record handle at Saratoga or Del Mar the first couple weekends to HISA, but it certainly can't hurt if anybody out there thinks that, hey, this has been instituted and I'm going to gamble my money here a little bit stronger, or I'm going to devote more gambling dollars or disposable income to horse racing every week. Great for us. So it's going to take time, but we got to stay the course.
Aaron Wellman, Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, EclipseTBPartners.com on the website, and they've got a terrific portal to get involved with Eclipse. Probably the most important part of the conversation, Aaron, some upcoming starters. Where do we cash tickets? Let's go.
Well, I think we're pretty live this coming week in a couple places. We have got a really nice colt, and of course I've been touting fillies and staying conservative and finding value throughout the entire show, but we've got a colt named Capensis who we banded with Bob LaPenta, Ron Winchell, Anthony Beckett Gainsway, and Stone Street to purchase his yearling for $2 million. He was ultra impressive in his debut at Belmont last month. His name is Capensis for Todd Fletcher. He's going to run an allowance race on Saturday, hopefully, at Saratoga. He's doing very well. We've got a filly that we purchased specifically for Ship and Win bonus money at Del Mar, named Unworld, who's supposed to run in a maiden special weight race going a mile in the grass for Michael McCarthy on Saturday as well. I think she's pretty live. And then we've got a filly that was just second in the Acorn for Grand Motion named Divine Huntress, who's going to get some fast relief over at Laurel in the Miss Disco. She ought to be pretty live on Saturday as well. We've got a nice baby that was a troubled third for Mark Cassie down at Gulfstream first time out named Splurge that's supposed to run on Sunday at Saratoga. We think she's got a future. So I think we've got a handful of live wires all throughout the country, and hopefully I didn't just give them the jinx and they'll deliver on the playing field.
Let me ask, as we wrap up, let me ask about an import that looks kind of intriguing, a three-year-old filly, Maeve of Connaught, that you gave to Patty Gallagher.
Yeah, Maeve of Connaught's a really nice filly that has some strong form in Europe. We imported her, gave her to Patty. She's taken a little bit longer than we would have liked to come around here stateside. and she's definitely got some talent. She's going to hopefully run in the same race as the filly that I mentioned, Unworld. The reason I give Unworld the nod is just because she's had a little bit more of a recent race, and she just seems a little sharper coming into the race. I'm hoping that both fillies get in. There's one filly maiden special weight race going long on the lawn at Del Mar in the first condition book. I have a strong suspicion it's going to grossly oversubscribe. Both fillies would be live, and in the interest of full transparency, I think Unworld is probably more likely of the two to fire big on Saturday if she gets the opportunity to run, but don't put a gun to my head. I think they're both talented and both in with a nice shot.
Aaron Wellman, everybody, and a huge weekend for Eclipse, and obviously some very big things for the summer, Saratoga and Del Mar and everywhere in between. I see another import targeting the Colleen at Woodbine and so forth. So, Aaron, I always love getting together. I'm sorry I didn't see you this weekend because I was at Monmouth, but we'll see you soon enough. I have a habit of running into you at Saratoga. Okay. And of course, when I came out to Del Mar last summer, but always so much fun to celebrate these kinds of weekends with you. Continued success. Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, everybody. Aaron, thank you.
Thanks, Steve. And I say it every time I'm on. Thanks for having me. But more importantly, thanks for all you do for the industry. Keep up the good work. We appreciate you. And just have a great summer out there wherever you're racing.
Aaron Wellman, thanks so much. Let's take a break. Top of the hour upon us. And when we come back for hour three, we will whistle to the wire. Andy Serling is going to join us next. Jason Beam is close by. We'll get a visit in with Jason as well. And Jill Byrne this hour. At the races, we're live at Colonial Downs. Back after this with Andy.